Well. Happy Monday. Deep from the heart of Ottawa, Canada, that's the Soul Jazz Orchestra, creators of resistance music. And this is one of my favorite albums, Freedom No Go Die. The song or the tune is Mojuba. It's from their 2006 album, Freedom No Go Die. Of course, that's a hint to, or a nod to Fela Anikulapu Kuti, the great Nigerian activist and rebel musician, and his rhythms keep going on. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and am I glad to talk to you today? So what happened? Last Tuesday, in very fine spirits, and with my wonderful sneakers, walking shoes, I proceeded to walk. And before I knew it, I was just sprawled out on the sidewalk and in excruciating pain, temporarily out of it, blacked out, and I couldn't lift my right arm at all. Turns out I had hit a patch of uneven sidewalk. It wasn't apparent because the bricks were kind of patterned, so you couldn't tell that there was any irregularity in the sidewalk, but there was. There was a dip, and I just went down. My leg, my foot got somehow, I don't even know how to explain it, but went down. My right arm was smashed, and the radial bone broken as well, the ulnar bone broken, the wrist broken, and it was an absolute mess, and I was bleeding profusely. It was really bad. A beautiful young lady driving along the road, she had her baby in the back seat and a friend in the front seat, and they stopped and offered me a ride to the hospital, although I could have, or perhaps some people would say I should have waited for an ambulance, but I was in bad shape. And I got to the hospital. They worked on me right away. But it was really bad news. So I'm speaking to you with a very vastly swollen right arm that is in a cast from the, I'd say, the tips of my fingers all the way up to the top of my arm. And just feeling sorry for myself. I'm trying to milk this. Not having very much luck. But look, these things happen and you just have to deal with them. So I wanted to let you know that's what accounted for my absence on the air for a couple of days. And you know, we just continue. And in the meantime, this is how life works. While this is going on with me, PRN was moving. So I am returning for the first broadcast day of the week to a new setup, which is, of course, in the process of completion. So it's about life going on. You just have to make adjustments and keep going. You know, it could have been much, much worse, and it wasn't. So I'm grateful for that. But in the meantime, there's a lot of residual pain and still some more surgery to go. But I thank you, those of you who reached out to me. It is so incredible and endearing when people take time just to say, you know, you're in their thoughts and prayers, and that itself is a healing effect, and I thank you for it. And I feel extremely fortunate to have this additional ammunition available to me to help pull me through. As you know, I'm dealing with another serious health challenge, but it's the same thing, actually. Life gives you a bunch of things to deal with, and you just have to try the best that you can to summon up the best that you have to deal with them and maintain a good attitude. So thank you. Now, before I go any further, I want you to know that our phone situation is still being worked out. They're still installing. They're still putting the new studios together. And I haven't seen any pictures yet of the new studios, but I'm told more space, better able to accommodate the full functions of PRN. And this is great. This is good news. You know, it's movement and movement forward. In this case, actually, movement cross town in Manhattan. And perhaps that is, in fact, the benefit of it, that you get a break with rents as you move across town from where PRN originally was. Now, this means that we have to play a little dicey game here with the phones. The number is no longer 888-874-4888, not for today. That will come back online as soon as they get the wires done. You know, that the thing that guys do. But for today, the number to call will be 646-918-6619. 646-918-6619. And it won't be able to take multiple calls all at the same time. It will take one call at a time. So that's what we're working with. We troopers, we can get through. It's not that difficult. 646-918-6619. And I was looking forward to talking today because I heard you have a new and improved Democratic Party. I thought we ought to talk about that. This new and improved Democratic Party that you seem to have. I didn't know that you would do this behind my back. I go away for a couple of days and I come back and the Democratic National Committee held its expectedly raucous winter weekend meeting in Atlanta, Georgia over the weekend. And it was to take care of urgently needed business. As you know, the DNC, which runs the party, the Democratic National Committee, has been without a chairperson for some time. Since you may recall that Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the congresswoman from Florida, had to quit last year because WikiLeaks documents showed that she was actively sabotaging the campaign of Bernie Sanders in favor of Hillary Clinton. So she got busted and she was thrown out. And Donna Brazile, a party insider, stepped up to the plate and was named a interim an interim leader or chair of the Democratic National Committee. Donna Brazile, a frequent commentator on political cults, talk shows and so forth, soon enough found herself in some hot water. WikiLeaks documents again showed that she had passed primary debate questions to the Clinton campaign. And so she quickly served notice that she was not going to be fulfilling her term. And then, of course, the election, and we see in the aftermath that all hell has broken loose. And in the middle of it all, there seems to be no real direction in terms of leadership from the Democratic Party. So several candidates had put forward themselves and their new ideas for consideration. And what do you know? They didn't make it. Instead, the Democratic National Committee named one of its own standbys, one of its own, as the new chair of the Democratic National Committee. Tom Perez, former Secretary of Labor under President Barack Obama, and in turn, he immediately decided to show the gusto and oomph of his leadership style. He immediately asked to break precedent and name his deputy. And that deputy was Representative Keith Ellison of Minnesota's 5th District as a deputy chair. So now the Democratic National Committee is armed and ready, and they're waiting. They just can't wait for a fight. But guess what? There are many, many things that happened over this weekend, other than the fact that we had all of this stuff going on, and it captured the news and so forth. Let's get a flavor of what happened in Atlanta. The new Democratic national chair is here being interviewed about being the new national chair, his vision and so forth, and what's coming down the pike, and how they're going to take on Donald Trump, and how they're going to revive this party. All of this is happening in this little clip that I want you to listen to on ABC interviewing Tom Perez over the weekend.
They're going to ask the question of all of us. Where were you in 2017 when we had the worst president in the history of the United States? We will all be able to say the United Democratic Party led the resistance, ensured that this president was a one-term president, and elected Democrats across this country.
Fiery start there for the new chair of the DNC, Tom Perez, after his election yesterday. He joins us live this morning. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Chairman.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
You got a congratulations from the president yesterday, right after your win. He says, congratulations to Thomas Perez, who has just been named chairman of the DNC. I could not be happier for him or for the Republican Party. Your response?
Well, you know, Congressman Ellison and I are united, and our Democratic unity is Donald Trump's worst nightmare. And we not only had a good day here in Atlanta yesterday, George, but we had a good day in Delaware, because the real challenge is, can we channel this energy that we see across America into positive action? And in Delaware yesterday, there was a race for a state Senate seat where the balance of the Senate was at stake. We came in there. We had a great candidate. The DNC supported. Our revolution supported. Grassroots activists supported. She kicked butt, and we took that Senate seat. That's what we have to do as Democrats, is help elect people in state houses, the presidency, local government, everywhere in between.
That is a start, but I think you'd agree it's just a start. And yesterday at Bernie Sanders, you know, there was some discord at the meeting and then actually some boos after you won. And Bernie Sanders came out with a warning. Of course, he backed Keith Ellison and said it's imperative that, Tom, you understand that the same old is not working and that we must open the doors of the party to working people and young people in a way that has never been done before. How are you going to do that?
Well, it starts with the partnership that Congressman Ellison and I have. We have been friends for a long time. We are united, and our values are identical. We want to make sure that everyone has a fair shake. We want to make sure that that woman I met in Detroit, part of the Fight for 15 movement, she slept in her car the night before I met her with her three children. We can do better. We want to make sure that people struggling to save for retirement have a fair shake. We want to make sure that when you work overtime, you get paid overtime. These are things that Donald Trump is fighting against, and these are things that we're all fighting for as Democrats. When we lead with our values, we win, and that's what we're going to do.
You are up against a brutal map, both in state houses and in the congressional midterms coming up in 2018. I want to put up a map from the 2016 election right now showing by county, the election results by county, that sea of red all across the country. How do you begin to turn that tide of red around when it's so predominant around so much of the country?
We begin by building strong parties in the 50 states and the territories. We didn't invest enough in our state party infrastructure. We didn't invest enough in grassroots organizing. We ignored rural swaths of America. We can't do that. We need an every zip code strategy. We need to redefine the role of the DNC so that we're helping to elect people from the school board to the Senate. And the best way to do that is to build that strong infrastructure and to strengthen our partnerships with people in the labor movement, with Planned Parenthood, with others who are involved in that grassroots organizing infrastructure. When we lead with our values, when we're in every zip code, we succeed. I'm very optimistic that we can do this because I think we have the right values. I think we have the right message. We saw it yesterday in Delaware. We're going to see it down here in Atlanta in a congressional election that's coming up here in Cobb County and surrounding Atlanta. And that's what we have to do everywhere.
Hillary,
a lot of work, but I'm optimistic.
Hillary Clinton put out a video just before the final vote calling for unity. Let's listen.
The challenges we face as a party and a country are real. So now more than ever, we need to stay engaged. Let resistance plus persistence equal progress for our party and our country.
So Hillary Clinton is staying engaged. Are you open to see her run again in 2020?
Everyone who wants to run should run, and I'm confident we're going to have a robust field of candidates. What I am also confident about is as we invest in our state party infrastructures, we are going to build strong capacity to elect Democrats up and down the ticket. There is such an electricity out there across America, and it's not just the traditional activists, George. It's people who come up to me and say, Tom, I was a casual participant in democracy. And I understand that democracy can't be a spectator sport. And Congressman Ellison has been spectacular in tapping into that grassroots advocacy. And we're working together to make sure we translate this activism into results. Because when we lead with our values, I think we succeed.
Chairman Perez, thanks for joining us this morning.
Pleasure to be with you.
Okay. Well, that's a lot of energy and a lot of optimism and great foresight and a lot of money spent in getting the word out that there is new leadership. The Democratic Party has overhauled itself. It's a new day at the Democratic Party and at the party headquarters. The nucleus is back together and they're ready for a fight. Except, you know, I listen, as my mother would say, with my listening ears. And listening with my listening ears, I'm hearing a lot of stuff that needs to be discussed that has nothing or very little to do with all the hoopla that we just heard. We heard of all the things that the Democratic Party envisions in becoming far more aggressive as a party, far more grassroots. We see the leadership. We have a Latino. And he has immediately chose, once he won the nomination, he immediately chose an African-American Muslim as his deputy. And we are seeing people like Bernie Sanders and some of the left members of the faction of the party coming to terms and beginning to sound like they want unity in the party, if only for the sake of beating Trump to a pulp and beating back the rightward move of this country. Lots and lots of points were made in that short thing. We even heard from Hillary Clinton, Her Royal Highness, commenting from the sidelines about the need for persistence and resistance. You know, but here's the exercise for the day. Pretend I just woke up from my operation. Okay, I was out of it. I had no idea what happened here, except that I get the end result that there is new leadership at the Democratic National Committee, which runs the party. There is a new team in town, and they are talking about getting ready for a big fight. Okay. Now, your job for the rest of this program is to tell me what happened. And by telling me what happened, I don't mean for you to reiterate all the things we just heard. I accept them as the facts. Pretend I have no other information. And I'm relying on you to decipher what happened from the craziness and all the hoopla that you saw or watched or listened to in one way or the other about this development. What would you say are the most significant things that happened over the weekend in Atlanta with the election, if you will, of Tom Perez and his newly installed deputy, Keith Ellison of Minnesota, as the new lead guys guiding the Democratic National Committee and the party generally from here on out, especially as the party looks at midterm elections, congressional elections, and not too far behind that, the 2020 presidential race. For today, the number that we'll be using is 646-918-6619. And it can take only one person at a time, so we wouldn't have that many calls coming in all at the same time. So you may have a wait, okay? But let's proceed with some patience, and we'll get through this exercise. Remember, you are dissecting for me. I'm just dropped out of Mars. I just woke up from this surgery. And you're telling me about the significance of this event in Atlanta over the weekend. We have Marie from Baltimore. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Latrish.
Hello.
I want to say this. I want to say it last week or before. Your happy birthday, your belated birthday.
And it's my birthday is in June.
Oh, I'm sorry. Then
I'll take it. You're offering it, I'll take it.
I'm sort of off the rocker today, and I hope you have a speedy recovery in the medical condition you were in you were talking about last week, because I had two relatives of the same thing that you had.
Thank you.
Close relatives. So I know a little bit about cancer.
Thank you.
It's a challenge, but,
you know, you keep at it. You keep moving.
You keep moving. And
that's
back
it.
In January, if I could make this quick, I made a comment, and you said, this goes deeper than what I stated, and what I should have said back there in January, that African Americans are being accosted by some white people, and I hate to say this, some married Jewish women, doesn't matter what age, in demeaning us. And they're not people who are high up in the United States as far as being known. And we're being talked to in a way that they act like slave masters. I have to say it like that.
And, all right, but let's get to the topic today. Tell me observed, what actually happened there in Atlanta this weekend.
Well, I'm going to have to be honest. I really didn't listen that well. I don't have any hope for this country.
We'll take that as a short answer today, only because we have a number of people on the line. And this is not going to end today. So you'll have an opportunity to look at the news event. You'll have some time to catch up. Thank you, though, for getting us started today. Steve from New York, you're on the air. What happened?
What happened was somebody was peeing down my neck and telling me it was raining. That's what happened. It's the same old, same old. The Democrats cannot change. The only hope we have is a third party. And, of course, Bernie sold out. And nothing's going to happen. You know, you're going to have the same elites running things. And I give up, too. I've had it.
You give up with this?
I wouldn't
go
near the devil.
Why have you no faith that nothing has changed?
Excuse me? I'm sorry, I didn't quite get that.
You said you have no faith at all that anything has changed.
No, nothing's changed. It's the same old elite that's running the Democratic Party, the Clinton people, who I have total disdain for. I mean, I've given up on the Democrats already. I did not vote Obama. I voted Ralph Nader. Last time I voted for Jill. I voted for her the time before. That's our only hope, and it doesn't look like it's getting that way. Bernie, as far as I'm concerned, although I tried to support him, sold out, and I knew he was going to do it. You were right about that all along. So I'm totally cynical at this point. If there's a good third party, and it's not the Green Party, if they show their heads, I will get out and back to work. Otherwise, I'm just going to keep doing my volunteer work with the Fortune Society and helping one person at a time. That's all I can do at this point.
But do you agree that there should be some kind of way to use an organized system, if you will, bad as it is? Does it have any redeeming value at this point? Is there some way that progressive forces within the Democratic Party, if you could say that, can in some way still prevail?
In my opinion, absolutely not. In fact, I think they're going to get rid of Donald Trump at some point. I tend to think that this thing with Russia is going to be the next Watergate, his Watergate. And they're not going to allow it. Those that are ruling are going to continue to do so. And that's pretty much how I feel. And I think I'm making a good argument for that.
What could the new leadership, Mr. Perez, Tom Perez and Keith Ellison, what could they have done to give you some glimmer of hope that this new thrust has some potential?
I don't think they could. The only way that I might have been at least been interested or have any degree of optimism would have been for Ellison to get in. They kept him from it. It's the same old, same old. the party leadership, the traditional leadership that has brought ruin to many people in this country, still continues to hold it. And they're not going to give up their power, nor their money, nor anything else. So I don't see anything happening. And, you know, they can talk all they want, and, you know, talk is cheap. And I'm looking at the results. Under Mr. Obama, how many millions of people have gone into poverty? Who did he reward? He rewarded Wall Street. Wall Street will continue to be rewarded, whether it's under Trump or anybody else. You know, and that's just how I feel.
Well, thank you very much. Thank
you
for your considered opinion.
I really
opinion.
Hope you feel better. I've been listening to you for about 6 months. You're a bright woman. Thank you.
Thank you. 646-918-6619 is a number that we're dealing with today. It's part of the shift that PRN is making. It's moving. And soon enough, we'll be up and up with our old number. But today, 646-918-6619. Wendy from Brooklyn, what do you see?
You, Teresa, I am so glad that you brought up the subject matter today, because it was burning me up.
What was burning you up?
You know, I think an opportunity was missed there at the DNC. It's time for a paradigm shift. And I feel like what he could have done, well, not even what he could have done, but what they could have done to start out on with respect, was to utilize all three of them, because there was another gentleman, I can't call his name, but he was from Indiana, and they were speaking about him being a millennial. Can you help me out with his name? He was white, and he served in the military. He was
running
as well.
I'm going to search for that.
Okay, well, while you're doing that, I'm going to make it brief, because I'm not good at speaking publicly. But what I would like to say is, honestly, and I've been in the military, what should have happened, in my opinion, is Ellison, Perez, and this gentleman should have been utilized like what we would call squad leaders. You could have anybody be the DNC chairperson. You could have Bernie Sanders, or at least asked him or nominated him, if you need a spokesperson to speak outside and just have a head. But you should utilize each and every one of them as leaders and come together with a plan to, because your tent is too big. I'm sure that he's turned, in other words, Perez's winning this chair position has turned off some Ellison supporters and has turned off some middle America white supporters. And forgive me, I can't call his name, so I'm speaking, you know, this way. But I just feel like an opportunity was missed to do differently, a paradigm shift. You don't have to have one man that's in charge, because one man does not have all the answers. And if you're going to be a Democrat, you know, Democratic Party, start that way.
But didn't you get a feeling that, you know, there was a kind of a, there was a lot of stuff happening here that was so wrong?
The
party completely set aside its, the many, many sins against it. It never dealt with them. It never said, well, yeah, we were kind of corrupt. You know, we really pulled some really crazy stuff. The party was out of control. It never addressed the internal problems of the party. It never addressed the multitude of sins it had committed against its own.
Well, at this point, I don't expect that Perez would have did that, because, again, he's coming up out of, well, from out of that camp.
Right.
Know, Clinton,
but
Obama
at the same
camp,
time,
he's coming out of that camp.
Did you not expect some different response from the likes of Bernie Sanders and the likes of Keith Ellison?
Well, at this point, there's no paradigm shift. Everybody is, you know, it's business as usual. And herein lies the problem and why they're going nowhere. Because your tent for the Democrats, because we do not have a viable third party, The tent for the Democratic Party has so many people under it. And until it becomes acknowledged, and I don't just mean verbally acknowledged, I mean in design, in power structure and design, it's not going to work out. You, like I said, I don't know if you've ever studied military or been in the military. Like I said, each one of these men that wanted that position represent a constituency that needs to be motivated and dealt with. And each strategy may be different when you're heading into those different arenas, whether you're talking to, you know, minority America, Black America specifically, Hispanic America specifically, older Democratic Party, and then the millennials. You're dealing with, as far as the white folks in Middle America who, you know, have defected and were desperate enough to deal with Trump despite all the things they saw coming. And until the Democrats deal with this, like you said, there are sins, there are real things that have gone on. Until there's a paradigm shift, until they realize that they cannot do business as usual, when I mean that, I mean the power structure. There was no need to elect one man to do what. It's ridiculous. They need a paradigm shift.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chris from Lawrence, what were the tactical errors committed here by those who were not dyed-in-the-wool Democrats?
Well, I can't speak to the tactical errors, but they do look like the traditional tactics. I mean, it seems like they're filling in blanks to cover for the usual racism, the usual status quo nonsense. It looks like, okay, we don't just have a black person. We have a black and a Latino. And is he Muslim also?
Yes.
Oh, we have a black, a Latino, and a Muslim. They could only get better if they're Latino.
No, the African-American candidate, Keith Ellison, is Muslim.
He's Muslim, right?
Right.
Yes, exactly. I'm saying it looks like they're just filling in the blanks to cover for their usual racist behavior.
You're onto something here, and I want you to get it on your own.
Uh-oh.
This is a very, very significant thing that just was paid absolutely no attention. And that is the use of race by the Democratic Party this time around. But the question is, why? What for?
I'm sorry, repeat the last part again. My phone was breaking up.
It's about race. You're right. Okay. There's a major racial message that they communicated, but it didn't seem to connect. People didn't seem to get it. What do you think that message was?
You know, I can't say what message they were trying to communicate. It just came off as, you know, some sort of, look, we really are, like the same way Obama came out. He didn't run on his record. He didn't run on, you know, like, I don't know much about these two candidates. And the one guy who came in to fill the chair, I don't know much about them. And I still don't. And they're already, you know, in place. And it just seemed, again, like, to sum it up, I really can't say much more than it felt like the same old, hey, look, we got a black guy, we got a Puerto Rican guy.
What is the biggest giveaway here from the conduct of the Democratic Party and its use of racial signals?
Well, I mean, it's traditional. Like, it goes back to that whole, you know, Hillary has a firewall and what was it, the Carolinas, or I forget where it was. I mean, it's just, here you go, people, you know, continue to serve us, continue to idolize us, continue to be at our beck and call because, you know, allegedly they're there to help us. And look, we're empowering you. I think it's just a trick. That it just seems like the same old, we are the party of you people. You people don't forget, you know, who got you where you are. You know, it just seems like the same old, we hate you, but we need you. So let's make a show of putting you in up in the front every now and then.
Well, actually, you're really, really, really close. You're really, really close. It's a, I think it's a very explosive story. Of course, it's not being discussed at all, but you will get the story by paying attention to the symbolism.
Okay.
And you know, you see what is being presented. You listen to what is being presented. The messages are coded heavily, and they give us a clue as to what the Democratic Party's mission right now is and who it must bring back into the fold.
Yeah, the people they lost are people like myself who are just kind of, I mean, the people who seem to love them, love them. But people like myself who used to be part of the party, I mean, who knows? Maybe they can trick us all again. I can't really say. I don't even know.
Believe it or not, you're really, really, really close. Thank you so much, Chris, for your call today. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrice.
Hello, how are you?
Getting along. You know, I don't take energy and put it into nonsense like the Democratic Party. I mean, we really talk about this too much. It's like the using our energy to decide which candidate is going to be warden at the prison. As far as I'm concerned, those two people that they put into the leadership positions are just two apparatchiks who are in front and are going to corral in, let's say, the people of color, you know, Latinos and African Americans and so forth. But nothing changes in terms of the mission of either the Democrats or the Republicans. And at the top, you've got to consider that the oligarchs at the top who handle the money bags are still there, regardless who is fronting, like this new team they've got in there now, a people of color team. So that may be in front, but the goal is the same. And I ask myself, what are people of color and the masses of people doing in the oligarchs, Democrat, and Republican Party in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
They are not interested in the masses of people that live here. They are interested in running a structure that benefits the oligarchs and those at the top and keeping the rest of us in poverty or near poverty. That's the way I see it. So I can't give a lot of energy 100%. To worrying about who they
pick. What we need to do, though, is to register these things out loud, because the party believes that it's doing its thing and it's being effective. But when you look at the symbolism of it, the gavel, as it was passed from Donna Brazile, a black woman, to Tom
Perez.
Perez. All right.
Yes.
Big thing after the tumultuous voting. Okay.
Right. Two apparatchiks.
Well, not just that. The Democratic Party visually was communicating that African Americans and Latinos and women were fully integrated. This was a real great party, and it was ahead of its time. So Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the white female who got busted, passes the gavel to the black female, who is a total clone of the party, and she now passes it on to a Latino male who immediately appoints an African-American man as his deputy, if you will.
Deputy warden.
And guess what? In the meantime, all of the work. Or I should have put it this way. None of the work that they are talking about getting done either was being done or is expected to be done by other than people of color. The whole thing is predicated on people of color. Hillary Clinton is not yet in play, but she is in play. They parked her to the side so that people can hit the streets again and rebuild all of the work of the Democratic Party, the construction of it, the reconstruction of it, the fixing of it. All of that is being done by people the party has betrayed. And the assumption is this big thing of the big tent being revived and bringing in more people and the great leadership more focused and all of that stuff is actually, again, to prepare for the handing of the gavel to Hillary Clinton. This is what this is all about.
Yes, and that's a lot of energy people are putting into this endeavor, and it's a fool's errand because of the fact that people haven't done their homework and are not doing their critical analysis of the system and how it works. So these are masters at playing the game, and just like the title of my book, but I've heard other people say the same thing. If you don't understand the game, you're going to be played. And what they're doing is playing people. And we've got to understand it because the people at the very top are still in control. You may put a Latino face up there, a person of color, or Keith Ellison as African-American, and that's just a front, but the conditions are the same, and there's no hope in ever changing this place and this party. It's not going to work. So,
but how do you explain that smart people, the people who were on the left, the people who were not too long ago describing themselves as independents, people who are third-party type people, people who want to start an entirely different movement. How is it that they got all wrapped up in this thing?
Well, it's been my experience to find that even the so-called, quote-unquote, smart people, the ones that even have advanced degrees, PhD, and so forth, are sometimes not very smart. So, you see, the point is, if you don't do the activity to deal with how the system works and how the people are played, because you're dealing with so many people and a small group is controlling, then you will be played for the rest of your life. There's no future in this, and people have to get to that point where they stop, automatically going into a booth and pulling a lever for a Republican or Democrat. It's not going to work because those parties do not serve the people. They serve only the people at the top in the interest of the people at the top, and will give only enough in terms of social things for the rest of the population and economic things, as little as they can get away with without a revolt. So I feel it's just hopeless to keep going to this Democratic Party and think you're going to get somewhere.
What is the counter-narrative if you were in charge of a budget that can get the message out massively? What would that message be?
Well, the message would be to go on a campaign to teach people to investigate a system analysis. And that's something you're not going to get in the ruling classes, public or private schools. Teach people what the system is about. And most people, even people with advanced degrees, don't understand the system. And in addition to that, after showing them what the system is about, showing them how the game is being played against them. This is being played. That's what's going on. So as long as they can play people and get away with it, they will stay at the top. They control the money bags. And we go through these elections every few years, every couple of years, and the results are the same. The same ruling class is in power, and the people are catching the devil down at the bottom. So that's one is system analysis, and the other is showing people how this game is played in this country. I heard a number of programs where they kept talking about the word democracy over and over and over again. It reminds me of a big lie, because how can you say this is democracy when everything is basically controlled from the top? And that's the way I see it.
What should be done about Bernie Sanders now? Having seen him go through this role of saying, well, he was in this process only to push forward the candidacy of Keith Ellison.
And, so Bernie Sanders, as I've said before, I look at him as a Judas goat. I would marginalize him because he is trying to bring the people into the Democratic Party. So I would not listen to him. And the point is that this is not going to work by depending on Bernie Sanders. If the Bernie Sanders are going to go forward in a party like the Democrat Party, then I think that's pretty hopeless for real change to happen. There has to be some different type of arrangement, maybe new parties, some arrangement where we would have a situation where we could really have democracy that I think we don't have now. I don't think this is democratic at all. And most people don't understand. They think because you have an election and the two ruling parties can control ballot access, and they can gerrymander, call plus ballot access, and they have electronically ability to control all the votes, and they still decide who is going to be running. They decide who runs, and they let you think you are participating in democracy by letting you pull a lever on a machine. Some of them. Some people.
Well, I am so glad, because of the calls that we got today, that enough people are seeing through this veneer. This is very, very important, because it means that you're alert and you are not easily fooled. But still, we're up against a mighty, mighty machine, and more we're seeing the desperation within that group to hold on to power that they have lost, and they're desperate to find some way to get it back. The only way for Hillary Clinton and people like that is to go through the traditional process, but they have to feed it. They've got to recreate and patch it up. They got to work at it really hard. And there has been such an exodus of people who just said, you know, forget this, I'm done, that the only people left that they can turn to as having any possibility of forming a flank against Trump and the Trump the Trump wave, which will now continue. It started with him, of course, and it will continue. But for the immediate political futures, they have to go back into the black communities and the Latino communities and the working class communities. They have to go back there. These communities that they were so sure that they had, that they didn't have to pay any attention to them. They can continue doing their own thing, following their own programs to pursue their own power. But they're realizing they have to go, they have to do some reconstruction.
You know, in the black community, many of us have a short memory. And some of us don't remember what the Clintons have done to the black community, the mass incarceration, all the other regressive things that were done in terms of immigrants and education and whatnot, denying certain scholarship aid to people who have been in prison and all the other damage that's been done.
There's a hint that we have to go.
And we forget
to go.
All about those things.
We're out of time. Thank you all for calling and for putting up with our little shift today. That's great. Up next, Meditations and Molotovs with Vincent Emanuele. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com, and we'll see each other tomorrow. Thanks for listening today. Bye-bye.